Newsweek magazine carried the article. On the front, you see the question, "What Teens Believe?" And on the inside, there's an extensive article called "A World of Their Own." Very interesting and telling title. In fact, the article talks about the 22 million Americans between the ages of 13 and 19 and spends quite a bit of time at the beginning trying to put forward a disclaimer to say, you know, there are a lot of teens that don't fit the standard profile. And then they go on to tell you what the standard profile is. Let me share it with you. "You are who you hang out with," she says. "Before parents made you who you are, now teens are pretty much defined by their friends. I see my mom maybe an hour a day and not at all on the weekends," says Vanessa, 17, of Whittier, California. Article goes on to say, "Today's teens have less in common with each other than those in generations past," psychologist David Damon of Stanford University says. He says, "Some are absolutely on track. They're bright-eyed, genuine, and ambitious. But a significant number are drifting, or worse." Why? Goes on to say, "Yet as a group, they lead lives that are more adult-free than those of previous generations. Adolescents are not a tribe apart because they left us, as most people assume," said Patricia Hearst, author of the 1998 book, A Tribe Apart. "We left them. This generation of kids has spent more time on their own than any other in recent history." Interesting statements. Data released last year from the Alfred P. Sloan Study of Youth and Social Development found that teens spend 9% of their waking hours outside school with friends. They spend 20% of their waking hours alone. Teens are isolated to the extent that has never been possible before, says Stanford's Damon. There is an ethic among adults that says, "Kids want to be autonomous. Don't get in their face." Finally, the article summarized by a young man who says, "There's a lot of anger in my generation. You can hear it in the music. Kids are angry for a lot of reasons, but mostly because parents aren't around." Roberto Rodriguez, age 17. Interesting. The thing that defines this generation of teenagers, 22 million, more than anything else, is the absence of adults in their life. Now, some of us have been encouraged by recent studies which would suggest that teens say that of all the people that they look up to and admire in the world, that parents come up at the top of their list. And a lot of people patted themselves on the back and said, "Yes, we're doing a superb job." But if you think that that means what you think it means, you're wrong. Many of us think, well, then that means the kids want to grow up to be like mom and dad. No, not at all. You know what that says? What teens are saying is, "I admire the fact that my mom and dad get up and go to work in the morning, that they hold down a job, that they bring home an income. But that's not for me. I admire the fact that my mom and dad have stayed married for a number of years and stuck it out even though they don't get along a lot. I admire that, but that's not for me. I admire the stable life in the suburbs that has been provided by mom and dad, but if you think I'm going to live that boring life that mom and dad live, that's not for me." Teenagers today are saying, "Yes, we admire mom and dad, but we don't want to be like them. We don't want to be like them at all." And so, what's the deal? Isolated, alone, and by themselves. The product of what a generation of psychologists told us to do. Leave your kids alone. Let their creative juices, their creative energies, their creative ideas, let them find their own self-expression. They need independence. Everybody bought into that. And the results are not looking good. You say, "Well, why are you talking about this on Mother's Day?" Because I would submit to you today that Mother's Day today is not the same as Mother's Day of the past. Because moms and dads are not as close and in touch with their kids in this generation, according to the research, as in any of the previous generations. We've got a wide gap there. And we've been in a study of the book of Proverbs, and if the book of Proverbs addresses anything, and it addresses a lot, the main topic of the book of Proverbs is the relationship between parents and their children. In fact, the whole focus of the book of Proverbs is the emphasis on what parents are supposed to do to instill in the next generation the wisdom that it takes to raise godly kids. And so today, as we look at parents, we want to look at the book of Proverbs, and we're going to cover a lot of material on parents and kids, because Proverbs is really a textbook on the whole process of parenting children. There is a general principle that runs through the book of Proverbs, and it's very clear. Let me share it with you. The general principle is this, that parents of godly adults will enjoy the fruits of their labor. Parents of godly adults will enjoy the fruits of their labor. In other words, if you raise a child to adulthood, and that child becomes a godly adult, your life will be blessed immeasurably. Look at, in fact, I'm going to put them up there for you so you can follow along. In Proverbs 23, 24, and 25 says, the father of a righteous man, not a righteous kid, but a full-grown righteous man, has great joy. He who has a wise son delights in him. May your father and mother be glad. May she who gave you birth rejoice. One of the greatest privileges is to raise a godly adult. Notice 17:25, a foolish son brings grief to his father and bitterness to the one who bore him. Of all of the things that you will look back on over the course of your life and be satisfied or dissatisfied with, how your children, those who you birthed into the world, how they turn out, how they grow into adulthood, will either be your crowning pride and joy or your greatest disappointment in life. You who are pursuing careers, you who are pursuing hobby, who are pursuing physical fitness or additional education, and in the process of that, you're leaving behind time spent with your children, developing godly kids. I will tell you now, the wisdom of the ages disagrees with you. There's no greater pursuit of which you can invest your life than putting forward a godly son or a godly daughter into adulthood. That is the greatest investment. What's really weird is that the baby boomers have children for different reasons than generations of the past. We have children primarily because we want to have the experience of children. We want to have the fun of children. We want to have the enjoyment of children. And so children are born into the world, into a family that has a mentality that this is just one more experience on the road of being fulfilled, of having a good, fulfilling life. And there's a danger in that. You know what the danger is? What if part of the parenting process is not fun? What if part of the parenting process is just downright hard, nasty, difficult, mean work? It's easy if you go into parenting simply for the purpose of having that added experience. You know, I had the experience of college, I had the experience of my career, I have the experience of my first home, I have the experience of my new car, I have the experience of my friends, of my golf scores, I have all those experiences. And on top of that, I also want to have the experience of holding a baby, my own. What a wonderful thought. For about the first 2 hours. And then reality sets in. We don't have children to have a positive experience. We have children to propagate God's ideas of wisdom into a future generation. And that takes an incredible amount of work. Well, how do you do it? What does the proverb say? How do you do it? Well, let's spend a few minutes looking at mom and dad's part. I stuck an outline in your bulletin. You can pull it out and follow it along. I'm going to move rather rapidly, give you a number of principles from the book of Proverbs. The first aspect from mom and dad's part in raising godly kids, the first aspect of your job is teamwork. The first aspect of your job is teamwork. In teamwork, we see in the book of Proverbs that mom and dad have to be committed to one common goal. one common goal, and that's the goal of wisdom. In 4:7, we read, "Wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom. Though it cost all you have, get understanding." Moms and dads, if you want to raise godly kids, you've got to be together on one common purpose. Your goal is to instill God's wisdom into that child. Now, if mom and dad are thinking, you know, mom's thinking, you know, what I want my child to become is the smartest child. That's my goal. That's what I'm working on. And dad's thinking, you know, I want my child to be the most athletic person in the world. And that's what I'm working on. What's going to happen? You're going to have a divided home. But both of you are focusing on the wrong priority. You have to have one common goal, and that is the goal of wisdom. Secondly, parents in the area of teamwork need to be committed to speaking with one voice. Unity. Speaking with one voice. Notice in 1:8, Solomon says, "Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching." Mom's teaching, dad's instruction, those are the same. Mom and dad are on the same page. They're teaching the same things. They're promoting the same things. You can't say to your wife, "Honey, I'll teach him how to throw a baseball, and you teach him how to be a good person." You can't say, "Husband, listen, I'll teach her how to be beautiful, you teach her how to be good." You can't say that. It requires both husband and wife speaking with one voice in unity about one goal, and that's the goal of wisdom. Dr. James Dobson, the child expert, child development expert, says, you know, they've done a lot of studies on different types of homes where parents are real strict and authoritarian and where parents are real permissive and let kids get away with a lot. And he said, you know what we found? We found that parents that are together, whether they're very strict disciplinarians or whether they're very loose in their discipline, if mom and dad are working together, they're on the same page with the same goal, children in homes where parents work together turn out basically good in both environments. In homes where mom and dad are divided, two separate agendas, two separate pages, it doesn't matter how strict the controls are, and it doesn't matter how loose the controls are, those kids are going to struggle in life. Mom and dad have to be on the same page, which means that your marriage is important. If you're raising kids and you're married, your marriage is critical. You know, God instituted marriage before Adam and Eve ever had a child. And if you don't tend to that marriage, if you don't work on that marriage, if you don't communicate, if you don't love your spouse, you're not developing that. What are you saying to your child? You're saying to your child, at the point of intimacy, at the closest possible human connection, at the place we call love, you can never have it. You can never trust it. It'll never be good. It'll never be good. If they can't look at mom and dad and see mom and dad are on the same page as far as what they believe and what they teach, what are kids going to have to say? They're going to say, well, you know, mom believed one thing, dad believed another, mom had one set of priorities, dad had another set of priorities, and you know what? Nothing matters. Nothing is meaningful. There's no absolute truth because look at mom and dad. They can't even agree. Your marriage is critically important, teamwork. Second aspect of your part, mom and dad, is insight. Insight. You got to know what you're dealing with. If you're going to raise a child, you got to know what you're dealing with. And Proverbs talks about what you're dealing with. First of all, Proverbs talks about the nature of children. What are children really like on the inside? Let me share with you Proverbs 22:15a. This is a very important verse. Proverbs 22:15a says that folly or foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Now let me take this verse apart for you because this is a very critical, very important verse to understand. The world in which we live says children are basically born good and creative, and what you need to do as parents is do your best not to pollute or pervert them by putting any of your agenda or your ideas in there that will mess them up. That's exactly opposite of what the Bible says. Notice these words. The first one is folly. Folly in Proverbs is the opposite of wisdom. That is a stubborn self-orientation, a deep desire to create a world in the shape of my own making. Now it says that this concept, this self-orientation, this desire to have reality shaped to my whims, that is bound up in the heart of a child. Now, what does the word bound up mean? Literally, the word bound up means tied together, in league with, conspiring with. So there's a self-orientation, a selfishness that's actually conspiring or tied up in the very nature of a child. And what's it bound up with? It's bound up with the heart of a child. A few weeks ago, we studied the meaning of the word heart. And the word heart in Proverbs basically means the inner life of a person. Their mind, their emotions, their will, the whole inner being. So this is saying that a self-orientation away from wisdom is in conspiracy with a child's very heart from which the life of that child will flow. And what are you going to get? What are you going to get with a child? With a child brought into the world, you're going to get foolishness. That is part of their makeup. And every single one of them has to wrestle with this. Donna Perales shares this. She says, she knew how to get what she wanted. The pouty lips, the big blue eyes, the single tear. She knew it worked. It worked. It would always work. It always did. But something was different this time. He wasn't giving in. Not saying, sure, little darling, whatever you want. She was confused and angry, not understanding why. It isn't working this time, not comprehending how he can deny her. Openly defiant now, she looks at him, unable to see his pain, not caring. She is pure emotion. Out of control, she shrieks at him those three words, the ones she knows will do the most damage. I hate you! I hate you! She runs from the room. The words linger in the silence, echoing heavy, awful sounds. He sinks into the chair. The battle has taken its toll. He's tired, wounded. He hears her sobbing, the sound, much like the sound of a wounded animal. He wants to go to her, but he knows he can't. He closes his eyes. He knows it's not over. There will be more battles, more scars. How much more of this can I take? He wonders. This battle of wills, the struggle of power, this fight he must not lose. After all, he sighs, she's only two. Foolishness is part of the nature of a child, a self-orientation that leads to an evil course of life. If you don't believe that, if you don't understand that, you will not approach a child in a proper way. In addition to that insight, you also need to know what happens to a child who's left without redirection. A child left without redirection. Proverbs 29:15 says, "The rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother." In other words, if you leave a child on this path, where folly is bound up in their heart and it's acting itself out, and you don't do anything to redirect, that child is going to shame his mother, he's going to hurt his father, he's going to be a disaster. I looked on with much glee when I looked at an article that was written in 1991 by the graduating class of 2001. And as they shared their wisdom in 1991. You see, back in 1991, then President Bush was putting forward a real initiative to say we really need to reshape education to make education work. And so they went into the classroom and they interviewed the students to ask them what they thought education ought to look like. And here's what the graduating class of 2001 said about school and how school ought to be shaped back in the year 1991. Erica said, "I would give all of the kids recess and put hot tubs in every classroom. I would give the kids a surprise every day and give them $100 every day. When the teacher walks outside the door, I would slime them if I ran the school." Elena says, "If I ran the school, I'd let the kids write on the walls and just be crazy like me. Let the kids dance around the room. Let them take off their clothes and shoes, too. I'd let them stand on the desk if I ran the school." Brand says, "If I ran the school, kids could have anything for lunch, and it would be free. I would let them chew bubble gum in the school, and they wouldn't get in trouble if I ran the school." Richie said, "If I ran the school, I would put a rattlesnake in the school." I would put an elephant, a seal, a shark, and a whale in the school if I ran the school. Nicole said, if I ran the school, I would have a trampoline in each bathroom for the girls. Each boy's bathroom would have climbing ropes. There would be a concrete built-in pool in each classroom. I would have each person in the school wear a bathing suit, even if it were winter. If I ran the school, there would be no teachers. Stephanie said, if I ran the school, there would be a monster movie theater. There would be a pool table in the gym. We could bring our pets to school. I don't run the school, but that's what I'd do if I did. Frankie said, if I ran the school, school lunch would be free with the drinks. You notice the boys are interested in the free food. There would be Nintendos in the classroom. There would be horses in the halls. I would put worms on the floors and snakes on kids. And a pay gate up front. This is my favorite. Valen said, if I ran the school, everyone would make lots of noise, jump, play, run around, even bring their toys. There would be a gigantic river flowing through the school, and all the kids get free rental tubes. There would be big water slides almost everywhere. They would go so high, higher than the air. And then he closes with this. If I ran the school, it would be like a zoo. Kids left to themselves. Now, that's the graduating class of 2001 at elementary school in Austin ISD. If kids ran the world, what would happen? You say, kids can't run the world because they don't know. They don't understand. Their path is self-oriented. It's foolish. Mom and Dad, that's an important thing for you to understand. That what's bound up in the heart of your child, in your son or your daughter, is not positive. It will ultimately lead them in the wrong direction. And so, that leads us to the third insight, and that is that parents must redirect or direct their children. Notice Proverbs 22:6. It says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. The word train in this passage means literally to dedicate or to initiate a child. Literally, what the passage is saying is that we have to take our children who are on the wrong path, the path of folly or foolishness, and we need to initiate them on the right path, on the way they should go. At an early age, we have to remove them from their natural bent or their natural direction towards self-centeredness, and we have to redirect or change them, move them in a different direction so that they begin to travel on the path that they should go on. And what this proverb is telling us is if we can get our kids on the right path, they will continue on that path even as they get older. Many of us say, you know, my kid was doing just fine until they became a teenager, and all of a sudden they went on the wrong path. What I would suggest is that's probably not the case. You probably never got them on the right path from the beginning. For those of you who have preschool kids, for those of you who have elementary kids, do not underestimate the danger of allowing bad attitudes, critical spirit, rebelliousness toward mom and dad, mistreatment of other children. Do not let those things be passed off as, well, he's just creative, or she's just cute, or they're just bored. Because those attitudes become ugly at 13 and 14, and they become downright dangerous at 16 and 17 and 18. Parents, you need to get your kids directed on the right path, which is away from their natural bent. How do you do that? Well, let's look at the practice. Basically, Proverbs tells us there's four ways you do that. First of all, you teach. You teach them. Proverbs 4, 1 and 2 says, listen, my son, to a father's instruction. Pay attention and gain understanding. I give you sound learning so that you do not forsake my teaching. Are you teaching your kids? I'm not talking about, do you have them in Sunday school? That's a good place. Or Awana, that's a good place. Youth group is a good place. Who's teaching your children? Are you personally teaching your children? If you were to ask your kids, if someone were to pull your kids over and interview you, interview your kids. What does your mom think about this? Or what does your dad say about this? What do they believe about these things? Or what do they believe about those things? Would your kids be able to answer those questions? Have you taken the time to teach them, to explain to them the truth? Second is to warn. Not only do we teach our children, but we warn our children. And Proverbs is loaded with things to warn our kids about. In Proverbs chapter 5, verses 3 and 4, we're to warn our kids about immoral people. For the lips of adulteress drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Do you warn your kids about what immoral people can do to them? If they watch television in the evenings, they'll see all kinds of praise for immorality. Are you teaching them what immoral people can do to them? How about laziness? 12:24 says, diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in slave labor. You talk to your kids about what it means to be lazy? How about conflict? 15:1 says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but harsh words stirs up anger. Do you warn your kids about what they do with their tongue and how they create conflict in their life by the tone of their voice? How about attitude? 16:18 says, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. If there's anything that I believe that characterizes the generation of high school and junior high students today, it's this attitude of pride. I'm too good to look you in the eye. I'm too good to bother to even speak to you when you pass me and say hello. Why? Because I don't have to deal with you. My mom and dad never dealt with me. Why should I have to deal with you? You know what? God opposes the proud. If you want your children to have a lifelong battle with God, which you know they'll ultimately lose, let them live with their pride. Let them live with it. Let them turn their nose up at you. Let them roll their eyes in your face. Let them walk by and not speak to a stranger when they say hello, or not speak to a friend. Let them be proud. And you know what you've done? You've given them the freedom to fight with God for the rest of their life. Now, all of these warnings and many others are in the book of Proverbs. You can use that book to say to your children, look at what the Proverbs say. This is a warning. Avoid this kind of behavior. Avoid these kind of people. Avoid this kind of activity. It will damage you. Teach them, warn them. Letter C is discipline them. Parents, we must discipline them. I gave you a couple verses on discipline. Proverbs 22:15 says, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. 23:13-14 says, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he will not die. Punish him with a rod and save his soul from death. 29:17 says, discipline your son and he will give you peace. But he will bring delight to your soul. Basically, the principle is this. If a person as an adult does things that are wrong, they're going to experience pain. They're either going to experience the pain of imprisonment for breaking the law. They'll experience the pain of a broken relationship with a spouse because of their bad behavior. They'll experience the pain of breaking up another marriage because of bad behavior. They'll experience the pain of a job loss. They'll experience the pain of a wayward child for carrying on. Adults experience pain. And the pain that adults experience oftentimes is the kind of pain that cannot be erased. Once it's done, it's hard to go back and undo it. Pain has a way of getting our attention. And what God is saying in the book of Proverbs is this. When our kids are small, oftentimes they're shielded from the consequences or the pain of their actions and attitudes because they live in the safe environment of our world, our home. If we as parents don't implement and introduce punishment for bad behavior to correct them, they will never get it. They will not understand that when you do wrong, pain follows. Oftentimes I have this conversation with my 5-year-old son. I say, Sam, you know you weren't supposed to do that, right? He says, yep, I know it. I said, why do you do it, Sam? And he says, well, I forget. I know he doesn't forget, and you do too, but that's his answer. And my response to that is, Sam, what do I need to do right now
that will impress upon you and help you remember so you don't do this again. Do you understand the principle? What's it going to take to make an impression on you that when you do this, there are consequences going to come? Because what you're doing at 5 when you turn around and slug your sister, if you do that at 25 with your wife, the pain's going to be a whole lot bigger, isn't it? Now, Ellen's pretty tough. But if he thinks that he can get away with that kind of behavior, what is his life going to be? And that's where we come in with discipline. Letter D. We need to call them to follow us. We need to call them to follow us. I love this verse, 23:26. Solomon says, "My son, give me your heart and let your eyes keep to my ways." Here's a father calling to his son and says, "Listen, son, you're too young, you're too inexperienced, you're too emotional, you're too vulnerable to be able to walk and make decisions and live your life and do it on your own. Independence is not the goal of life. You need help. What you need to do is you need to trust me. You give me your heart and I'll be the caretaker of it for you." And one of the things that I believe that we need to be doing, mom and dad, is we need to be making that appeal to our kids. You give me your heart and I'll take care of it for you. What that implies is that our kids can trust us. What that implies is that our behavior is such that our kids would want to follow us. But how many of you have actually called out to your children and said, "Trust me, I'll take care of you. You listen to me and I'll get you through this. You need my help. You need my help. I'm here. Give me your heart." And you call out to your kids and ask them that. My daughter's 12 years old. And about once a week, I look her in the eye and I say, "Listen, when it comes time to get married, you need to talk to me. You need to let me help you decide." Now, do I think she's going to do that? I don't know, but I'm certainly going to ask her. And I'm going to ask her and I'm going to ask her again. Because you know what I've seen in my lifetime? I've seen so many girls listen to the lies of a 19 or 20-year-old kid who doesn't have a clue about life. And he's speaking off the top of his head, and he breaks her heart over and over and over and over again. But she loved him. She did not know what she was doing. But you know what? Her old man knew. Her old man said, "Don't marry that guy. He's going to be trouble." And there are a lot of ladies who are sitting in this room right now saying, "Boy, I sure wish I would have listened to that guy, my old man. I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it would have been listening to him." Ask your kids. Say, "Give me your heart. Let me help you." And if you ask and they won't give it, deepen the relationship. Continue to deepen the relationship. Now, you can do all of those things, and your kids can still turn and go their own direction. So, sons and daughters, on this Mother's Day, let me challenge you that you have a part in this too. The part you have is to respect your parents. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, it says, "Honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you." Do you know this is the fifth of the 10 big ones? You know, the 10 commandments: thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery. This is one of those. In other words, God thought that you honoring your parents, placing them in esteem, respecting them, was so necessary for the functioning and survival of the human race that when he penned the 10 big words that included murder and theft and adultery, included not having any idols, when he penned the 10 big things that we needed to do, right smack dab in the middle, number 5, honor your father and mother. Kids, this is your responsibility to respect your mom and dad. They may not be very respectable, but you must respect them. Secondly, obey them. In Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, it says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise." When you disobey your mom and dad, when they tell you to do something and you don't follow through and you don't obey your parents, you are in violation of God's law. You're not just in rebellion against mom and dad, you're in rebellion against God himself. You've taken up battle. You've drawn your sword with God. You're fighting him, not just mom and dad. And this is just an incredible irony. But God has given you, he's taken someone with experience, someone with knowledge, someone with love, placed them in your life and given them the freedom to help direct you to take care of an evil bent that you have within you and to redirect that in a positive way, and for them to be giving that to you and for you to turn away and say, listen, mom and dad, I'm not interested. I'm going to do my own thing. You are a fool in capital letters. Mom and dad, one of the things you can do to help is please don't brag. Don't brag about how rebellious you were as a kid. You ought to grieve those days. When you sit around and talk about how many times you got away with murder and your parents didn't know about it or they didn't care, you know what you've done? You just reinforce this bad attitude in your kids. Every once in a while, I'll listen to somebody who shares their testimony, and when they talk about what they did before they became a believer, they say it with such zest and enthusiasm. They're so excited, and then they get to the part about, and then Jesus saved me and he changed my life. Every time that I disobeyed my mom and dad when I was a kid, I was in direct rebellion against God. And I'm very sorry for those days. I could have learned so much more than I had learned through the school of hard knocks because of the days I did not listen. Children, obey your parents. This is right. This is a commandment from God. If we got mom and dad who will take the time to tune into the kids, to teach, to warn, to discipline, and to ask, to call for their heart, we have children who are willing to respect and honor mom and dad, we will produce a generation that is so far superior to anything we've seen in our generation. And I just believe that the place for us to start doing that is right here at Hill Country Bible Church. Let us model for this community that God's principles are always the best way to go. And another generation will rise up and call us blessed. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father, as we come before you, we just thank you that we don't have to stumble around in the dark. You've given us lots and lots of great information that is self-evident. It works. We can just look at it and see the truth in it. So, Father, we just come before you and we pray that you give us the courage and the conviction to live it out. On this incredible day that we celebrate what it means to be mom and all the sacrifices and all the blessings that come with it, may our moms and our dads have real resolve to follow you fully. And we look forward to the results, for we bless you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.